Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. This is the podcast, as always, for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. Now, this has been a pretty busy week for the sector after the Prime Minister announced a series of new measures that indicate a slight tightening of the regulations. So let's take these in turn. So from Thursday, from yesterday, recording this on Friday, face covering is now mandatory in retail and hospitality for colleagues, and more on that in a minute. Pubs, bars and restaurants must operate on a table service only basis and must close at 10 p.m. And the COVID secure guidelines that everyone's been following to make their business as safe and secure as possible have now become legal requirements, and those are subject to fines of up to £10,000. For those of you in Wales, we also saw additional restrictions coming into force on alcohol sales from 10 p.m. Which go alongside the closure of on-trade businesses. So from 10 p.m. until 6 a.m. You're now not able to sell alcohol. And on top of all of that, the NHS Test and Trace app launched on Thursday alongside a requirement for hospitality businesses to display a QR code on their premises. And just to be clear on that one, as we've had some questions from members and heard some conflicting reports on this, convenience stores and supermarkets do not have to display a QR code in their business. If you want to, then of course you're able to do so. But because of the short dwell time in shops, they are not included in the businesses, that list of businesses that have to display codes. And I mentioned face coverings a moment ago, and this is an area that we've had a huge amount of member feedback on after the policy was announced by the Prime Minister on Tuesday. Unfortunately, the government weren't able to even table the legislation until quite late Wednesday night, and the guidance at that point was still out of date. So understandably, there's been some real confusion over what can and can't be done with face coverings. I'm pleased to say that we've since had a clarification and extra guidance has been put out. So this is how the new rules on face coverings work. The requirement for colleagues to wear a face covering only applies in public facing areas of the store. That's to say that in stock rooms, staff rooms or other parts of the business that aren't on the shop floor and aren't open to the public, there is no requirement to wear one. Additionally, if a colleague is working behind one of the Perspex screens that we've seen being installed in lots of stores over the last 6 months, or if they're in a fortress-style post office, for example, then they don't have to wear a face covering because there is a physical barrier between them and the public. And finally, as you might imagine, if a colleague has a valid reason why they can't wear a face covering and would otherwise be exempt if they were to go into a shop and not able to wear one, then that exemption is also valid while they're working. Hopefully that's now reasonably clear. We've got lots of resources on our website to help communicate the rules and the exemptions, both to colleagues and customers. Now then, as many of you will have heard over the last few months, we've been working with broadcasters to get messages out about what's been happening in local shops to local radio stations across the UK. And this week we thought it was quite important to do this again. And we've got a new interview to share that you might be hearing on your local station in the coming days. Our Chief Executive James Lohman is talking about the new measures that have come into force this week and also drawing on some of the findings from this year's local shop report, which was published a couple of weeks ago, to explain how important the sector has been this year.
The new government rules on shop staff wearing face coverings are the latest in a series of rules and regulations that shop owners across the UK have had to implement to keep their staff and customers safe. It's been a challenging year for retailers, but most have been quick to adapt to changing regulations. Well, to talk about this, I'm joined now by James Lohman, Chief Executive of the Association of Convenience Stores. James, what's your reaction to the latest rules on all shop staff wearing face coverings?
Well, of course, many shop colleagues have already been wearing face coverings when working in store, but now it becomes compulsory. It's a concern for us because working a long shift in a store with a face covering is quite uncomfortable. So colleagues will be taking more breaks probably. They need to do that for their own well-being during a shift. It's also very important to recognise that there are exemptions for some colleagues, particularly related to health problems. So if you do go into your store and you see colleagues there without wearing face coverings, it's not that they're flouting the law necessarily. It's much more likely that they've got a legitimate exemption from wearing face coverings. But it's been a frustrating time, really, very late publication of the guidance on these new measures. And we're still helping our members come to terms with these changes.
Just how hard have retailers been working over this past year to keep services going while implementing all of the rule changes that we've seen in recent months?
It's been incredibly difficult, and our members have really been heroes in their communities, offering existing services throughout the time, turning up to work when obviously the advice has been to stay at home, but they've been there as key workers having to go to work, and implementing new services as well, like home delivery, where we've seen 600,000 deliveries a week being made by convenience stores, when previously there were basically none being made through this channel. So, you know, phenomenal effort from our members to keep those services going. There have been changes around social distancing, queue management outside stores, around new things like Perspex screens and, of course, face coverings in stores. And the one thing I'd always say to customers is to support and help the people working in stores. We've seen too many incidents of retailers and their colleagues coming under pressure from customers who may be frustrated, and in some cases are behaving in a criminal way by making threats and abuse. So, you know, really important to support people working in those stores.
Now, on top of all that, there's also a lot of discussion about job security at the moment. How have your members fared when it comes to keeping your staff employed?
Well, for most of our members who are trading in those sort of community areas, villages, housing estates, they've generally seen an uplift in trade. They've been allowed to be open during that time. So despite all those pressures, they've managed to keep people employed. And if anything, they've actually taken on some new people, often from hospitality or other industries that have been very badly hit. And one of the things that we can offer looking forward into the future is really secure, reliable, local, flexible employment.
Now, you mentioned the future just then. What do you think the near future holds for shops, for local stores?
You know, I think in many cases, the local shop is going to save Christmas for lots of families by having that availability of product when perhaps people are finding it difficult to get hold of some things. Obviously, people who would use more restaurants and pubs over Christmas might be limited to the degree that they can do so. And then further into the future, I think we're crucial in terms of servicing communities as we go into, hopefully, a world after COVID.
Thank you, James. That was James Lohman, Chief Executive of the Association of Convenience Stores, discussing the impact of the latest government rules affecting local stores and the amazing work they've done in servicing local communities during the pandemic.
As I said just a moment ago, listen out for James on your local radio stations over the coming week. So with everything that's happened over the last few days, our annual summit actually feels like it was a lifetime ago now, but it was only a couple of weeks ago. And there's still plenty of content from Summit that we're getting ready to bring you. So one of the things that is new this year and is particularly exciting is the Masterclass series. This is a collection of online events that are available live to those who attended Summit, featuring leading retailers talking through what sets their business apart from everyone else. We've had two of these sessions already. Gone down really well, with two to come on standing out through branding and tailoring your retail offer. So if you attended Summit, if you're eligible to watch these live, check your inbox for details on those taking place on Wednesday, September 30th. And as a bit of extra content, I'm really pleased that we can share the audio from one of the sessions, one of the masterclasses that took place last week. It was chaired by our very own Will Nelson from ACS and features Simon Eastwood from Southern Co-op, Dean Holborn from Holborn's, and Avtar Sidhu, otherwise known as Sid, from Kenilworth Budgeons, talking about how to make local products a star. So give this one a listen.
Pleased to say now joined with by Dean Holborn of Holborn Stores and Sid from Kenilworth and Budgeons. So a good place to start, I suppose, guys, would be with you, Dean, to actually ask how you currently work with local suppliers and what type of products you stock.
Good afternoon, everyone. We've worked with local suppliers for years, a number of years now. But I brought a couple of samples actually to show. So one of them is the village where we are is Nutfield, and just recently a farmer started his own dairy. Again, it's obviously in a reusable bottle, so there's a deposit return on that. It retails at £1.50 for a whatever that is, a litre. So quite dearer than a normal bottle. But obviously there's a sustainability issue, offering in that as well. So people like it. They like the fact that they can return the bottle. They like that they're buying into something local. There's another company we use, which is Short Peeled Bread, which is like an artisan bread. And the collaboration with them, obviously throughout the lockdown, was amazing, because whilst, you know, the constraints on bread from our main supplier, Warburton's, as much as they delivered every day, Chalk Hills were delivering in excess of 100 loaves a day to us, to both stores, without any problem. So that sort of relationship with Chalk Hills and the local dairy has been immense during these troubled times.
Yeah, and I suppose, yeah, like you say, the last few months have been difficult with supply chains and things. So people have, especially retailers, had to rely on local suppliers. So those relationships are very important. So, and Sid, how do you currently work with local suppliers?
Yeah, we've been working with local suppliers for quite a while. And it's, you know, an instrumental part of the business. And as Dean said, through, you know, no one could, you know, foreseen what we've been through in the last 6 to 8 months. And lockdown kind of put us in a position that we've, you know, it has been unprecedented that we haven't put into that place ever before. So it's really interesting how we kind of, you know, different people risen to the challenges. And the local supply chains that we had were really, really, you know, they really helped us through to make sure that we, you know, our role in all of this was to make sure that we got food, you know, food was available, you know, for our local communities. And, you know, the local suppliers, not only did they gap fill, but they actually kind of went above and beyond. And, you know, we were getting deliveries, as Dean said, from number of different key suppliers, flour mills, from local bakeries, honey producers. There's all, you know, I could go on. Our egg supplier was delivering 3 times a week. You know, it was just phenomenal, really, how everybody just actually responded amazingly well. And I think one of the key attributes about that was because it's all very hyper local. You know, we all operate geophysically within a small area, you know, and as we were existing customers, and it was really interesting that, you know, some of these suppliers were asked by, you know, larger supply chains actually if they could supply them during that period, and they felt that actually they probably wouldn't be able to fulfill. Yeah. And they wanted to make sure that they looked after their, you know, the customers that they've always had, you know, and I mean, it's been great. And I think for me, you know, similar thing to what Simon says, you know, we go through a process with suppliers. It's got to tick a certain number of boxes and, you know, making sure that we can get consistency of supply is very, very important. Yeah. You know, it's great getting the right product. It's great getting the right kind of within the right categories of the store. But we really need consistency across the board. And that's not only on making sure we can get availability week on week, but also price. You know, we kind of set a price and we agree it for a year, and that works really well.
Yeah, no, that's. I think price can be quite important as well when it comes to customers and the downturn in the economy. That might be a thing going forward. But Simon, that video was great. How you work with local suppliers, it gave. It was great insight into all the work you do with them. I've had a question come in to actually ask about what the average footprint of your stores across the estate is, and how many lines would you roughly find in your average C store?
What, a total lines or local lines?
Local lines, yeah.
Okay, so the average footprint is somewhere between probably about 2,500 square feet. We can get our whole offer into 2,350 square feet, and trade up to about 3,000 square feet. We have a store on the Isle of Wight, which takes circa 600 local lines, but that's a bigger unit. And the average would be 50 and a couple of hundred across various categories.
Do you see that's driven by customers, or is that both retail and customers?
For us, we overlay demographic profiles. So whenever we set up or open a new store, we look at where the store is, who the customer is, what the affluence is, and then we consider the local product that we have available to us. I guess it won't surprise the folk listening to know that if you take city centre stores as an example, outside of food to go, which works relatively well in those locations, other products don't tend to work so well in those locations. But in the more rural community-based stores, it works really well. So it's absolutely critical that you put the right product in the right store. What I would say to everybody is, talk to your supply base. You know, the suppliers really understand their brand, their product, and their customer. And actually, in many ways, they guide us. You know, they talk to us about where they think their product would fit best for us.
Yeah, as you know, like you say, demographics, location are key to drive these things. Coming back to you, Dean, how do you, we heard Simon say like their Dragon's Den approach to finding new businesses and suppliers to work with. How do you go around sourcing those local suppliers?
If I'm honest, they tend to find us. We've got a good reputation locally, as our, you know, shops are quite unique looking. So we have tables in our stores where we display, you know, it could be a promotion, it could be something that's a bit different. So they tend to find us. They come, you know, they know we, our stores are nice looking and they want to be associated with us. So over the years, we've found people will, on the whole, come and find us. And then it can be quite hard because obviously these people might be customers and they think we've got this product that's is amazing. And you look at it, you think, that's not going to sell, or
yeah,
not in my shop. But that's how we tend to find. We should be, we probably should be more proactive. Sometimes I'll be in shops, I'll be honest. You know, we have nice farm shops near us, so I'll go and do my homework there, go to a farm shop, as you do with any other business, go and have a look, see if you can pick up some ideas. And then there's the sort of, there's the other products like, you know, sort of like the Darlingtons, the sort of, they're not local, but they're not a huge, huge brand, are they? You know, so we tend to, you know, use them a lot as well.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, Simon, you were saying about how far like the radius is for actually to classify a local product. If we come to Sid, what would your customers consider local, and would it go a bit further afield for yourself, or would you stay quite close to the community?
It's an interesting question, actually, because I think if you look at local, it's divided into either hyper-local or local. And a lot of people, when they say local, they automatically imagine that it's from Kenilworth, you know, from the, you know, the one actually within a 2-3 mile radius. And that, you know, that's impossible. You know, that we certainly have suppliers within that. You know, our local baker, our honey is from the castle. You know, we've got a local gin. But, you know, beyond that, yeah, no, we kind of give or take 20, 25 mile radius. It's got to be within Warwickshire. That's probably one of the key things for me. And actually, it's really to augment, you know, the ranges we have in store. You know, and some of these things, you know, we'll go to food festivals. You know, actually, in some cases, customers will come and tell us about a product they've tried, maybe at a farm shop or somewhere else, and, you know, could we maybe have a look at it, source it in, and we'll, you know, get in touch with the supplier. But really, it's you know, got to be within a certain kind of confinement. And, you know, food miles is very much on the agenda. You know, people are aware, you know, the community at large are aware. And one of the reasons of bringing local products in is to make sure that we can kind of, it's a sustainable way of, you know, bringing in a new business. You know, it's all within a local area. So it's...
And when it comes to merchandising these products in store, Simon, you had that great display in your stores which showcased those local products brilliantly. Did you see a massive uplift in sales when you came to do that compared to just putting them in the base category?
Yeah, well, we moved from base category to individual areas, so frozen, ambient and chilled, and that worked reasonably, but actually got the biggest pickup where we specifically put aside an area in the store and we branded the whole thing as local. We put the right type of lighting in, shelving in, rebranded that sort of subcategory of local foods. Also did shelf talkers talking about the provenance and the story of the local supplier, because we find that customers are really interested in the family history of some of these businesses, particularly the small to medium ones, and we saw a significant uplift. We started out, 14 years ago with a view that said we'd like this percentage of different categories to be local, you know, the percentage of total sales. We have a different view now. We tend to rely on our local suppliers to tell us about what's new in the market, their insight. And interestingly, in today's world, if you took ambient, frozen, chilled, and wines and spirits, they each have about an equal proportion of our local business. So it's really quite widely spread across our stores. And we have lots of stores that have no food to go and some stores that have no frozen, vice versa. So, yeah, we pick and choose.
Yeah. And Dean, I suppose when it comes to certain categories with local suppliers, are there some that work well and others that you try to stay clear of?
Yeah, some do work very well. We use a local butcher. So you might not argue that's a local, you know, the meat might not be local, but it's you're involving yourself with a small butcher. Again, that works very well because it's on a salary return basis. He gives us the margin and he gives us the delivery 6 days a week. So those sort of categories work, you know, that works exceptionally well for us. It complements our range from Blakemore. So obviously we still got the Blakemore range, like the meat market range, which is a good product, but obviously once people obviously, you know, try something that's from a butcher, you're building confidence there with them on that basis.
Yeah. And keeping the community that kind of feel as well, which now customers want to keep things local and have that very kind of so, yeah, interaction with those guys as well. So it's great. And Sid, do you do anything special with local produce in your store? Do you have a table display like Dean or a certain section, or is it mainly in the categories?
Yeah, no, a mixture actually. You know, there's a bit of a mixture. But yeah, we have a local ale, complete bay full of local ales. I think it's very important, you know, to bring local produce, local product to life. You know, you really need to make a fixture stand out, you know, for it to become, you know, integral within your store. And, you know, we have a table in front of the store with a local baker actually within Kenilworth called Andrew Davis. We've got him to make, you know, POS for him, you know, a big poster above with boards from the ceilings. And so, you know, we really go make a lot of effort into any, you know, all of these things that come into store. There's a lot of effort gone behind to make sure that we launch it correctly. And then going on from there, you know, we've got ongoing support, you know, so it might mean that we look in-store tastings. Obviously, that hasn't happened, you know, lately, but that is all part and parcel of when we first look at bringing in a local supplier. And in some cases, you know, in a lot of the cases, actually, we've made custom-made POS banners, branding for our store. You know, that's been part of making sure that, you know, bringing in, you know, some of these products within the store.
Looking at the in-store theatre and trying to get that engagement is crucial.
I think it's vital, actually, and I think it does actually a bit of a, you know, you make a lot of effort looking for these suppliers and your customers actually are looking to buy into them, but you need to do your part to make sure that your execution is first rate. You know, looks the part, it's done properly, executed properly. And you're actually bringing that section to life, you know. You need to kind of sexy up certain categories within the store. And some of these products really need to jump out at consumers and really kind of drive the whole category in many ways. You know, if it distracts them in certain parts of the store, you know, they get them to stop and look and look at other parts of your proposition. I think it's a big win. So,
yeah. You
know, we've done a local paste and curry sauces, and we've put them right next to the chiller in a custom-made stand.
Yeah.
And that's worked phenomenally well. You know, the amount of cases we've sold, you know, we've only had it in for a couple of months. You know, I had to order a pallet of this stuff. And, you know, we've probably gone through a quarter of a pallet already.
That's great. So I've got a question coming in for you about sales. So someone's asked, what is the percentage of sales of local versus the core category, and is this growing?
Absolutely. Refuse to share commercial information. I mean, it is growing. It's a significant portion of our business, local. But I don't really want to share the it's a ultimate business. So 10 million and 2 million in turnover. Works well. Growing well. I would absolutely back up what the two other guys said. I think through COVID coronavirus, so many customers forced to stay close to home. The big four in the early days didn't do a great job, came and tried their local convenience store and were quite surprised at one, the breadth of normal range and value that was in those convenience outlets, but secondly, the type of local product we had. And whilst we've not added lots of new suppliers in the sort of the lockdown or through the last, what we have done is we've had suppliers that have doubled or tripled the number of stores that they've supplied to. So we took a bit of a punt. The example that the guys gave around, you know, suppliers stepping up, more deliveries a week, more stores. We've done all of that, and that's really helped grow the category. We're about 20% up on local this year to date.
Thank you.
What a good year we've had with our supply base.
Yeah, and I suppose, Simon, when you are considering the local suppliers, are there any practicalities that you kind of have to look at, like maybe the price of the products, the waste maybe involved, seasonality, those kind of things?
Yeah, well, we come from an angle on this that if you think about the some of the bad press that some of the big retailers get around GSCOP and not treating suppliers very well, we have all suppliers that we're in this. If we enter into a relationship, it will be a minimum of a year to 18 months. And if we want to exit a relationship again, it will be a minimum of a year. And we will work with that supplier to help reformulate the product, rethink about price, packaging, etc. We have an assurance scheme. So we use a third party assurer in terms of food assurance and provenance and sort of quality of the factory. And again, dependent on the supplier, sometimes we'll pick up the tab for that. Other times, the supplier, they'll pick up the tab for that, because we're really keen to make this a positive and a partnership experience from the very largest type of supplier we've got right down to the very smallest. And, you know, Cook, for example, it's a renowned company. We treat that as a regional supplier rather than a local supplier. So that, you know, they trade across the whole of the South for us. So they're not rich, they're more. But we don't need worry about assurance, putting something in to do that. They've got all those things set up themselves. But the couple that run a microbrewery need some help. And you know, those assurers go in, and they also provide coaching, direction, help. It's not a sort of a tick box exercise and a marking exercise. It's how do we help you get your product to market?
Yeah. So it's giving them that added support and making sure it's not just a short-term thing and you're actually there for a bit more of the long run, which is great to hear. Coming back to you, Dean, we've obviously talked about what our shoppers' key drivers to buying local, and we talked about the quality, community, heritage, things like that. Do you think environment sustainability is playing a key role now?
Very much, yeah. Yeah, I mean, as I said with the milk, the fact that we can offer, it's not going to take over our milk sales, it's not going to, but I'd have to go around the village, you know, and I see those bottles around, you know. I went to deliver some flowers yesterday, and he had the bottles in his step because the chap delivers in the village as well. And that, I was sort of, do I put that into the business because it's being delivered locally? Do I need to be messing about with deposit return? But, you know, it ticks the box. People like it. People, it's special to them. We had some Nutfield wine this year. That was fantastic. It was just, this guy had a small vineyard locally. He came to me, and it just was right in the middle of lockdown. It was just people really, really, we just couldn't get enough of it, and sold his complete stock. So obviously he'll be harvesting soon, and we'll have there's a rosé and a white on the shelf. He literally just, I kid you not, like less than a mile from where I'm sitting now, he's produced it. So, brilliant.
That's people good. And Sid, do you see that in your area as well? It is about, the customers have more values and are worried more about where products are coming from?
Very much so. I think customers more than ever, you know, environmentally, socially, the impact, you know, some of our actions have, you know, in many different ways, whether it's plastic, whether it's air miles, food miles, the provenance of the product. You know, there's a number of different factors that go into play, and I think local really kind of captures that whole movement. And I think it's crucial, you know, people get behind local and support local in many different ways. And commercially, actually, it's the right thing to do. You know, it adds a completely unique proposition to your store. In some ways, you know, you can play a role by safeguarding that, you know, by having local trading agreements, you know, for your particular sites. And, you know, for me, I couldn't see any other which way to operate, you know, without a considerable a range of local products, you know, from, you know, in our store.
Yeah. And I suppose we touched a little bit on COVID and the impacts of that, and you guys working with more local suppliers. But Simon, I suppose customers can tend to perceive local maybe as being more of a premium item. Do you think going forward that this could be, I suppose this could hit sales because of the current economy and maybe they have to reduce what they spend, so they'll look at going maybe for a cheaper alternative?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting challenge. My view is no, and I'll tell you why. Because I think, firstly, if you put the right product in the right store and the right demographic and the right affluence, you're halfway there. I also think most customers want to treat themselves once in a while. And I think, you know, a customer in most of the convenience estates in the UK can get value products, can get entry price point products, but can also get something relatively special. And I think it's about customer choice. The one thing that we do work with our local supply base on, particularly if we get high waste numbers, is retail pack size. And I think that's something that's always an angle to look at. We had a partnership with a farmer who produced meat products, and we made a real mistake, if I'm honest, 3 years ago, where we retailed it in sort of vacuum bags. So it wasn't retail pack. It wasn't ideal. Okay. And guess what? Number one, it didn't sell. Number two, it got nicked. And you know, after quite a lot of pain, we looked at it and thought that was a really daft decision. So making sure that it looks good on shelf and it's the right price and presented in the right way, I think, is half the battle. So I think customers will always want another alternative and are happy to invest some of their money if they know it's supporting the local community. I think that's key.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we're going to have to start wrapping up in a minute. So I suppose one final question to the Archdeacon of you is, I suppose, starting with Dean, is there any top tips you could give to retailers watching this about how to source local products or how to work better with local suppliers?
Probably like I said, you know, do your homework, go look locally, go to nice farm shops, whatever, you know, decide what you want to look at, whether it's alcohol, whether it's a beer supplier. You only have to use the internet to source local products and source local companies. Again, you know, we use Twitter, Facebook to advertise our local products. And you tend to find people on that, especially on Twitter, because it's business to business. You find people champion local products. So I'd use the internet locally and then find what you want to, you know, which you think, as Simon said, is the right demographic for your store. So your store, it might not necessarily be about bread. It might be more alcohol orientated. So find something locally, you know, invest the time into local beers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And would you say that too, Sid? So in your store, you'd say, I suppose, a category to start at could be something like your ales or something local like that.
Yeah, I think it's all part and parcel of, you know, the way you operate in your local community, and you know, your customers can support you as a local business, and it's only right, and it's the right thing to do as well, you know, for you to look around and support local businesses in and around the area that you operate. You know, so you know, any retailer, I highly kind of get them to, you know, rethink and, you know, look at areas of your store. Every store is different depending where, you know, geophysically your stores are. Just look at areas that you think that you can add value. You know, there's kind of value to be driven in every category within store, but instead, you know, pick a few categories that you think are, you know, real hero categories for your particular location. You know, and start there. You know, look at some of the suppliers within your area and go through a process of making sure that they, you know, they can come up with products or have products that kind of can fill these gaps. And yeah, you know, drive that kind of additional purchase.
Yeah, and Simon, just to finish it off. So, have you got any tips for retailers as well?
No, I think the guys have said two of the key things: network, network, network. You know, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, social media. That's the new avenue, and I'd absolutely support that. You know, we have an organisation in ACS that has lots of local suppliers that come on. So, network with those folks. talk to them and understand some of their products. We've met people through ACS who now produce and supply product to our stores. And then I think there are lots of shows. You know, we're part of the Royal Agricultural Society on the Isle of Wight. We're part of Hampshire Fair, Sussex Food and Drink. You know, those things are that you go to those events and present, or you're part of them, and you could end up with 100 local suppliers talking about their products. So put yourself out there. I support everything the guys have said.
Yeah, that sounds like a good message to take away is to network and make sure you're on those platforms to find those local producers. And yeah, it's great. So that's all we've got time for, unfortunately. So I'd just like to say a big thank you to Simon, Dean and Sid to be on this panel. It's a great discussion we've had there.
Thanks for listening to the Local Shop Podcast. Remember to subscribe to get episodes before everyone else. Leave us a review through the podcast app if you're feeling kind. And keep up to date with the latest on the podcast on Twitter @localshoppod.